This is the Cubs related podcast, the special edition season preview. We have two guests on today. We have Evan Altman, the editor in chief of Cubs Insider, my boss per se. And we also have another editor in chief. We have Jared Willis from Baseball Prospectus Wrigleyville, or BP Wrigleyville. That's how you might know it. And then we also have measly Corey Friedman, who you know with who talks with me every week on this podcast. So we have two editor-in-chiefs and then Corey and I. So we'll be on our grammar game because I'm very aware of that. But today's podcast will just be a run-through of sorts. So we have five parts of the season preview. The first part is just a little introduction, and then the second part will be hitters, third part will be pitchers, fourth part will be surprises or bust, and then the fifth part will just be a wrap-up. So let me bring in Evan. Evan, how are you? How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. I am doing quite well. We are done officially as of the recording of this podcast with fake baseball, and I feel pretty good about actually being able to write about, watch Cubs games that matter.
You mean you don't want to write about the Wrigley Field sod?
You know, hey, I tell you what, sod is fascinating, and apparently I'm not the only one who feels that way. If the sharing on social media is anything, but it is kind of funny what people really pay attention to, right? It's like, oh, is Rondon broken? And are they going to have grass at Wrigley? Like, those are the two things that people are actually concerned about right now.
So, Jared, if you want to get a ton of views tomorrow, just write about grass, essentially, is what we're kind of saying.
I'm typing up a draft right now as we speak. You guys keep talking. I've got something going.
All right, guys. So let's jump right into this. Corey, should I even bring you in? No, we don't need to bring Corey in.
I'll just say hi.
Okay. Anyway, so let's jump into this first part. The first question I want to throw to you first, Evan, is what do you think will be the narrative, at least for the first few months of the season?
You know, it's going to be interesting. I think we're, you know, off the top, I think it's going to come from two angles, and I don't think there's going to be a single narrative. The one is going to be the dynasty, right? How do they keep this dynasty? Look what they're doing. And then the other half is going to be, and we saw some in the Chicago Tribune already, is, you know, are they going to be like the Cavaliers and, you know, reach the pinnacle and then does it all fall apart? So this underlying, you know, which is odd that it came from the Tribune. You'd think it would have come from the Crosstown paper or other paper in town. That seems like a Chicago Sun-Times, like, you know, a patented deal. So I think, but again, we're going to get those two. And it's going to be very interesting because April sets up. If you look at their opponents, April is the hardest month. Again, baseball is a crazy sport, but if you look at projected records, April is the one that projects to be the most difficult for the Cubs. So it's very possible that they're not going to be, you know, rolling out to this hot start like they did last year.
Why would you suggest that?
And it was crazy talk, right? But it's going to get really, like, part of me wants them to struggle early just to see what's going to happen with that narrative. But again, it's going to be narratives. That's what we're going to see. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Jared?
Either way.
Well, speaking of the Tribune, I actually wondered if they had done their April Fool stuff a day early. Because that was just a very bizarre couple of articles today. Like the, of course, the Cavaliers comparison, and then the what if they had not won Game 7? You know, well, you know, of course, we can safely assume there would be no parade and no trophy.
I may not be doing this podcast if they lost that game, but continue.
Right. Like, so many things that have happened would not have... would no longer be true. Yeah, very strange to see that. But I think, like Evan said, I think a lot of us are going to come into the beginning of the season looking to see, they're going to look to see, like, what's going to go wrong. We're waiting to see the Cubs show some signs of weakness, because there's that question now of the dynasty that's kind of hanging over their heads. And so it's almost going to be, that's what I think will be the big story in the first month or so, is we're going to be looking for the flaws. And like Evan, I kind of think I want the schadenfreude of just like having them maybe post like a 500 record in April, just so we can all go nuts about it. And then laugh at ourselves a few months later.
Kind of like that, that June spell before the All-Star break last year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh. Which now we've all completely forgotten, but we were wringing our hands about. Yeah.
Yeah. Corey, what say you?
Well, I'll play devil's advocate here. While I do think that would be very amusing, and I think the headlines would be worth it alone, I'm going to take that they bust out of the gate again. And, you know, I've kind of been obsessed a little bit with this notion of them kind of coming into being a well-oiled machine during the latter part, you know, and really most of last year. And for this year, I think that they now really know how to drive that machine. I think they are pretty set in their identity, you know, with the pitching and defense, and obviously the offense, but specifically limiting runs, playing really elite defense. And I think I'm not sure what I exactly think is going to happen. I think we might get closer to that where unless they, you know, post a really solid record in April, I think the questions are going to be flying and the takes are going to be hot. But I kind of expect them to come out and just, you know, bust out of the gate again, build up a big lead, and look like they did for the most, the better part of 2016. A sub narrative that I think will be interesting is, you know, how quickly into the year the articles and stuff start coming out calling for Hayward's head. I know it's something that gets talked about over and over again, but I think once they actually start playing real games, you know, and say guys like Baez or, you know, Almora or whoever, depending on how they're shaking it out, are not playing as much, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Hayward goes 0-for-4 on Sunday night. You know, Monday morning's paper is like, all right, how long are we going to ride this out? You know, and yeah. Is he a bust again? All that other stuff. So, but no, I think they come out the gate hot and doing their thing. I've said before on here that I think this team is going to play with an insane amount of swagger and pride to be the defending champions. And I am not really expecting any sort of hangover or malaise in that regard.
I'm with you. I think right out of the gate, similar to last year, they're just going to take off, especially under the spotlight, Sunday Night Baseball, John Lester taking the mound. I think it's a great launching pad, so to speak. And I, even though, like what Evan said, even though April might be one of the toughest months, it actually might be a good time to play these teams before they get into their groove. So taking advantage of maybe some of these rusty pitchers. So I think the narrative from the start, at least in the first month, will be, oh my God, the Cubs are doing it again. And maybe if they get off to that 25-6 start, that narrative kind of just continues. But there will be some bad, you know, ebbs and flows throughout the season. And, you know, if Hayward, like you were saying, Corey, if he starts to struggle, especially out of the gate, I give it like 2 weeks, tops 2 weeks before people start calling for his head, especially if Baez is not playing even every other day, people will be pissed off. But let's get into the hitters now. So a lot of hitters on this team, I think our opinions will go either way, but predict your top, let's say, three hitters, at least according to WAR, or however you want to go about this.
So, I mean, I think number one has got to be a no-brainer, right? I mean, Chris Bryant, again, obviously as fans of this podcast or of Cubs Insider will know, we've got a healthy affinity. I think, I mean, God, what Cubs fan doesn't have a healthy affinity for Chris Bryant? But, I mean, if you look at, so, and at the risk of going and rambling too far, I was talking with a buddy of mine, again, a guy who's really involved in Little League. We were talking about just how kids develop and how baseball players in general develop. And you see so many who come up at whatever level. They're bigger than the other kids. They're faster than the other kids. And they excel And then when the other kids catch up to them eventually, they aren't able to do anything with it. They aren't able to continue that dominance that they'd had because they don't know how to adjust. They just knew that they were better physically. So Chris Bryant is that physical freak, except, as we know well, not just from his results, but we know from how he works. If they think about pitching inside, he's going to yank one off the video board. So, again, I think we can expect him to be even better. I think, again, we're going to see the same from Anthony Rizzo. What I'd love to see from Rizzo is we generally see this, right? And we see this from any baseball player, but Rizzo seems to kind of do this, maybe not quite to the Alfonso Soriano respect, but really hot, really cold.
Yeah.
And at the end of the year, it levels out really well, but Rizzo will go through these just massive streaks of, you know, he'll go 0 for 30. You know, he won't hit a home run for 3 weeks, and he'll just go on a tear. I'd love to see him level that out, but I think he comes in there. And again, my vast appreciation and love for Kyle Schwarber will not let me put him below third. So I'm low-hanging fruit here, right? Like, yeah. I recognize, but I'm going Bryant, Rizzo, Schwarber.
I mean, I was just going to jump in and say, you know, I think it's time that, you know, can we pump the brakes on Chris Bryant? Because, you know, so that article actually, it popped up in my feed today.
That'll be retweeted for the next 3-4 years at least.
And may it never stop being retweeted. I hope he never hears the end of that. I can't really add anything to what Evan said because my top three is going to look basically the same. Schwarber, I think, can easily make up for some of his, you know, his averageness on defense with his bat. So I could see him coming in at third in terms of WAR, but it's going to be Bryant, Rizzo, probably Schwarber. Outside of that, I think there's potential for Addison Russell to really take off on offense, but I'm very cautiously optimistic about his season this year.
Yes.
So if I want to, just for the sake of being different, I'm going to say Addison Russell comes in third.
Jared, you're stealing my thunder, man. You're stealing my thunder.
We're going to have to stop the podcast. For one, Brendan, you can kind of stop being all verklempt and get yourself cool.
That's all right. Corey, are you going to steal my thunder too and put an ad?
Well, I was going to say that Jared actually stole my thunder, not because I necessarily wanted to get Russell in there, but I wanted to get it in there ahead of Brendan.
Okay.
I'm going to take the same top two, but I'm going to put Russell in there. I think especially Brendan and I have belabored that point into the ground about what we think about him. It was mostly me, you know, Brendan kind of laughing on to my idea. No, I'm going to take those three. I was inclined to put Schwarber. I actually had that penned in first, but I just, you know, I was thinking about how many games is he going to play? What's the defense going to rate out of? So I was too scared to commit to that. So I'll take Russell for three.
I'm going to go a step ahead of you guys. I'm going to go Bryant number one. I think that's kind of a clear cut, base running, defense, hitting. Number two, I'm going to go Addison Russell number two above Rizzo.
Ooh.
Yeah, a little bold. It's a very hot take right now. But the reason I say that is because the defense is going to be there. It's going to be top tier. And the base running should be there as well. So all really Russell needs to do to be even above a 5-win player is have around a 330-ish WOBA. And that's feasible. If his power last year translates again with this improved contact, we're talking, you know, 5, 6, 7 more extra base hits. And that alone brings up his WOBA from like 316 last year, north of 330 this year. That's it. Just a few extra more base hits would really throw him over the top. So I got him at around 5.5. And then Rizzo, probably around 5 like he is every single year. And I would like to put Schwarber in my top three, but I'm with Corey. I don't know how many games he's going to play. I don't know about the defense. It does scare me a little bit. The offense, I think, will be there naturally, but there's a little bit too many unknowns in terms of what type of defensive value he can provide. But with that being said, how many games you think Schwarber will actually lead off or play in general?
I don't know. You know, it's interesting because we've seen him out there, and he's acquitted himself pretty well in left, right? Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, that's – like, I look at – so, you know, a lot of people look at it, and again, I still get angry at the conversations I had to have with people about his injury last year where, it's because they put him out left. That's what happens when you put him out there. Like, yeah, that's the first time we've ever seen an outfielder collide with another outfielder. That's never happened before.
And that ball was hit like 400 feet in the gap.
Yeah, like it was in Arizona where it's like the polo grounds out there in left center. They're running full tilt on the third game of the season. I mean, you know, and who was it? Wasn't it Stephen Piscotty? I don't remember if it was the season before or that season after. Who? I mean, that was a gruesome looking, and he ended up coming back like a week later. But who?
Yeah, I think it was Piscotty. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, this is a guy who's played in the outfield for a while, right? This happened, and we've seen it happen before. Anyway, long story short, the play Schwarber made last night in right field, and again, so we're recording this on Friday night, so this is Thursday night, the first of their two exhibition games in Houston, where he hung back, knew he couldn't make the play, let the ball carom off the wall, fielded it, turned and fired a dart to second base. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, it's not about catching a fly ball, right? It's not about necessarily, I mean, that's big, but it's about learning to actually play with the nuances of the position. And when I saw that, I'm thinking, okay, this guy legitimately knows what he's doing out there. Right? It's going to be okay. He's better than Matt Holliday, or, you know, he's better than Adam Dunn. And those guys were passable. He's not going to catch the ball with his dick this season. So, I mean, these guys were...
That would be quite the feat.
Yeah, I mean, that was impressive. It was, you know, well, I guess he didn't really catch it. He just took a shot to the junk. But, I'm just rambling now. It's the Evan Altman comedy hour. But no, I really do think that was the thing that people thought, okay, they saw him face plant in the NLCS, you know, against New York, and thought, gosh, they can't put him out there. They're going to have to really sub him out against these guys. But you also look at his numbers against lefties, and it hasn't been great in the majors, but he's only played, you know, 71 games or whatever in the majors.
I know, it's crazy.
Outside of the World Series, which doesn't really count because he wasn't in the field. Well, now he's had this chance, and we saw what this guy can do, man. Look at what he has done. This guy was a catcher in college. He's had limited time in the outfield. He spent 6 months on the DL with a blown out knee, and look what he did. If he puts his mind to it, he's going to do a hell of a lot better than I think people give him credit for. So this is the longest answer to a short question ever. I do really think he can make 120 starts in left. I think he gets a few starts behind the plate. I think given the configuration of the roster, we're also going to see him get a ton of at-bats late in games, you know, different switches. He'll be able to come in as a pinch hitter and stick in the game. So, I think we see him play 140, 150 games.
Wow.
Yeah, I think in terms of starts, I'd probably jump in at about the same number, 120 in left field or so, you know, sprinkle in a couple in right field occasionally. And I think he starts at catcher 10 or 12 times. And then, yeah, Evan's right. I think he's gonna pop up pinch hitting spots. Of course, anytime they can use a DH, that's an easy fit. And so probably, 145, 150 game appearances. But just to, like, piggyback on this, you know, in terms of his defense, I mean, it is remarkable when you think about what he's done. But it's important, too, to consider the fact that he's, you know, defense in left field changes from stadium to stadium. It looks a little bit differently depending on where you're playing. And so, like, the play he made the other night, you know, that's a ballpark. Has he ever played there before? I don't think has he played in Houston?
No, I don't think he has.
I didn't think so. And yeah. So, you know, like Evan points out, he knows to, you know, play the carom off the wall any ballpark he's never played in, which is, I think, pretty impressive when you think about it. And so I'd put him in for 120 outfield starts, 10 or 12 catcher, and then another 15 or so between designated hitter and pinch hitting easily.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on board with all of that. I don't know that I have anything really to add there. I would say it's crazy. You know, it comes off even in, you know, just on the audio, like Evan really hates Kyle Schwarber. It's kind of nuts.
Yeah,
I do. It's
harsh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I loathe Kyle Schwarber. Right.
But yeah, no, I think that all sounds about right. You know, and as far as the leadoff experiment, I think he'll be there, you know, as long as he's doing his thing. I don't know that it's something that Joe will be looking to change up too quick. And, you know, as long as he's slugging the ball and hitting it like we know he can, I don't know that they'll be looking to move out of that quickly.
I feel like if I say Schwarber will play less than 120 games, that Evan may, like, come and kill me. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say 121. No, I'm not going to do that. I see probably around 135, 140, all things considered. Even if he doesn't start, he'll get into the game for an at-bat or two. As far as catching goes, I hope he does catch more than 10 games by the All-Star break for my fantasy team so I can get that eligibility. Realistically, though, like Jared said, I think he'll probably get 10 and 12 starts. And more than likely in, like, maybe not in emergency situations, but just time to give Mickey some rest, and this is Contreras' first full Major League Baseball season, so every now and then I can see it happening. Well, we're not really concerned about Schwarber's offense. Defense is questionable, right? But he still looked good in Houston. But on the complete opposite spectrum, Jason Hayward's defense, no worries. His offense, Corey and I have been talking about it a little bit too much, I think, over the last month or so. What do you think Hayward's offense will be like in terms of weighted on base average or batting average or homers? What do you guys think?
Oof. You know, what I've been saying, and this is like, again, this is the mantra that I've repeated in the hopes that the karmic influence, you know, radiates up to Chicago and it affects him, is that, you know, hey, if he can get within 10 to 15 points of his career averages, right? If he can, I don't care if he's even his career average, you know, hey, hit 250, 260, you know, have your OBP 330 to 350, you know, kind of just be like a league average hitter. That's really all I'm asking. And I think anybody's asking, if you're a league average hitter, right, let's WRC plus of 100, right on the nose, man. He'll be perfectly fine. Although it's funny, you know, you do see of late it looks like, and I think all of us would recognize, right? If you change your swing, and you can do all the things you want, you can work in the cage all you want, but when you actually start facing live pitching, it's a totally different ball game. No pun intended. But he does look, you know, he looks like he's driving the ball maybe with a little more authority. He's not rolling over on it quite as badly. I'm probably too high on it. I'm probably just, I want to believe too many things. But I think he's going to be okay. Not great, but I think he's going to be okay offensively. Average hitter.
Yeah, I think if, like, let's look at the projections for him. And even if you take the more conservative projections like Zips or even Baseball or Pacoda, neither of those are like, those are the two most conservative projections. And those are still calling for, you know, him hitting about 257. Pacoda has him at a WAR of 3.6. Zips has him at a WAR of 3.2. So if he can do that, I mean, we're going to be, Zips has him at 2.3. But if he can do that, I mean, it's going to feel like he is extravagantly better than he was last year, even though that's kind of a marginal improvement. you know, even his Zips projection has him at a WRC plus of 95. So still just slightly below average, but that would be a more than 20 point jump from where he was last year. So kind of the nice thing about Hayward is he doesn't have to improve that much on offense to feel a lot better than he was. And so I, like Evan, just be average. And I think people are going to be happy.
So I actually went back and listened to Brennan and I's, I don't remember if we called them bold or not, but, you know, post All-Star break predictions from our show, you know, last July or whatever.
It's probably a disaster.
It wasn't a disaster, but I did say that, you know, Hayward would finish the second half with weighted runs created of league average, 100, and that didn't happen. So I don't know if I want to make that same prediction. But I'm with Evan on the point that it's been a slow process. And I think a lot of us, you know, when we first sort of saw the new swing and we're getting the results in the games, we're a little nonplussed and kind of wondering what exactly, you know, was super different other than some, you know, physical stuff that you could see. But it has looked like it's been slowly getting incrementally better. So I don't know if I can put an exact number on it. But, you know, looking at his line from last year, 230 average, 72 weighted runs created plus. I don't know if he gets that up to 100, but I think, you know, definitely closer, and I think, you know, like you guys are saying, I think he gets closer, hits league averages, and again, I know we've all talked about this and written about this pretty exhaustively at this point, but you know, a few better struck balls, a little bit better luck, you know, and these numbers look a lot less ugly upon first glance, and I hope that's what happens, you know, because especially after watching that Rain Men documentary the other day, I think some people write it off, you know, the value of being a good teammate and all that other stuff. But he really does seem to have made quite the impact on that clubhouse. And for how hard he's worked and the amount of effort that he's put in, it would be really nice to see even some level of payoff for that. And I think it would probably help him relax a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know really what to expect. I sometimes have to just catch myself and not get too frustrated or try to predict, you know, an entire major league season based on, 45, 50 plate appearances in spring training. You know, making these dramatic changes, it's not going to take just 1 month of facing pitchers who are still working their rust off. It's going to take longer than that. It'd be kind of foolish to actually expect Hayward to dramatically improve even in that short time window. So I think it's going to be a little bit more of a transition period even in the first half of the season. Overall, I can see Hayward as a ceiling, like 325 WOBA. Right now, that seems like it's kind of pushing it, to be honest with you. So I'm going to go ahead and stay around like a 95 WRC plus, and that's still valuable with his defense. That should still translate to, I think, around 3 wins or so. So that's okay. But if he doesn't continue to hit at an above major league level, then I still think fans will be frustrated despite his good defense, and especially if you have minor leaguers, top prospects like Ian Happ and Eloy Jimenez pushing their way through the system, especially Happ, some people are not going to be too thrilled about that. But speaking of Happ, what is your estimated time of arrival for Happ?
I estimate that he will arrive with the Tampa Bay Rays, or
hot take.
I climbed up a hill a while ago, and I'm gonna die on it. that says I still think Hap is at this point the most likely player in their organization to be traded. He's not up yet, right? I had said the same about Baez a year or so ago, or a couple years ago, when he was kind of in that similar position where he was this, you know, this kind of unknown prospect, and who knows what he could do. But I will say this: I came out of spring training much more impressed by Hap, because early on, you know, you're facing a lot of minor league pitchers, and even the major league guys you're facing are just trying to, you know, they're pumping fastballs. They're just trying to locate it, and there's going to be a lot of mistakes. And hey, maybe you catch one, you know, and you drive one out. And okay, great. We've seen our share of spring training all-stars who never amounted to anything. But the thing is, as the spring continued to wear on, as he would come in to different points in games, he would play different positions. He's all over the place. Who knows who he's playing? And he just kept raking. And it wasn't just home runs. I mean, the guy is making things happen.
It was like every at bat. Versatile.
Yeah, it was just like every, you just expected it. And he would just keep doing it. And he's got that, you know, that mean mug, man. He comes up, that dude doesn't smile. He's all business when he comes up there, which is, you know, there's something about that I kind of like. I love that this Cubs team is really fun, that they're loose. But there's something, you know, without being like John Lackey, there's something about kind of that getting that hard ass in there who's like, dude, I'm here to put in work. Get out of my way. And so I like that. But at the same time, I have distanced myself at arm's length, because I keep feeling like Hap is that guy who they're going to end up flipping for a controllable pitcher at some point here in the near future. But that's my thought. Like I said, I climbed that hill a while ago, and I'm going to die on it.
Well, at risk of sounding like I'm just going to keep parroting whatever Evan says, I actually tweeted this the other day. I said, Ian Happ, when I think about Ian Happ, I think about how much a team like the Rays would love him. And I did get some angry responses to that. But If he's not traded, he's a September call-up, barring injury, of course, and those kinds of things. I don't see him coming up before rosters expand for a couple of reasons, but namely, there's just no need. You can let him develop in AAA because we don't need him at the major league level at this point. But I think the dude's trade fodder for sure. They're going to be on the market for a starter. And not just a rent-a-starter for, you know, the push to the playoffs in the second half. They're going to be looking for somebody that they can stick into the rotation for the next couple of years. Who that is, we could throw a bunch of names around. But, yeah, I think when he makes his debut, it's in somebody else's uniform and maybe still in September.
I am going to continue the train and agree with all of that. I think barring something really, you know, catastrophic, and I am knocking on wood for anybody worried about that. You know, there's just no reason to bring him up. You need him playing every day, getting the opportunity to continue working in the field, working at multiple positions, which is something that he's talked about a lot. Yeah, I mean, I think this front office has long been on a quest for cost-controlled pitching, and they have a guy who, you know, kind of presents a really good chip in that, someone who's, you know, ready to bust the door down, or knocking on the door at least. And, you know, we'll see if they get the right offer. That's always, you know, of course, there's two sides to this. If they don't get the return that they want, you know, they can't really move him. But I think that there would be plenty of people that would like Ian Happ, and I would guess that he is moved before he plays the Chicago Cup.
I am not going to continue this trend because you three are
lame. Ooh, of course, yeah. Brendan ruins it.
I know. But I am going to actually say he'll be up in June. So this is not – now I'm sounding like an idiot by suggesting that. Jaime Candelario came up, around June last year, a little bit earlier than I expected. Even Schwarber, when he was called up, what was it, Cleveland 2 years ago? That was kind of unexpected.
June 16th June 16th, he came in and caught after Miggy got thrown out. His first actual game was June 17th in Cleveland. Yes.
I'm sorry. Did you memorize that?
I was at the June 17th game in Cleveland.
I was going to say, wow.
That was when they won 17-0. It was the largest ever interleague shutout in Major League history. But I was...
That's like ingrained. Much better than
the most recent game I've been to at Cleveland. But anyway, continue on with your thoughts that no one wants to hear because you're disagreeing with the rest of them.
But I think June around then, someone's... And it's going to happen. Someone's going to get like a boo-boo. They're going to hurt their knee or something. Someone's going to go on the DL. And maybe it's to showcase Ian Happ. He'll be up earlier than we might think. And this front office has been more aggressive with pushing some of their players than I originally thought, dating back around 2013, 2014. I remember being completely blown away when they called up Addison Russell basically about 3 weeks into April. I never thought that would happen. So if he's ready, and if the Cubs want to get value back immediately for someone like Happ, I think he can be up in June, maybe play a week or two, maybe an interleague series, and to have someone DH or have him play in the field and have Schwarber DH, whatever you want. And I don't know if he'll get traded this trade deadline, to be honest with you. If a team that's contending is looking to make a move, I doubt they would probably trade their cost controllable pitcher because they would need that pitcher to continue being competitive. So if they were to eventually move Happ, I think it's more likely in the offseason. But I do, I think June, maybe he'll get a few games here and there, showcase him just in case they do make a deal around July. And then maybe what Jerry was saying, in September, you call him up. Hopefully they'll be leading the division by at least 10 games. You can kind of give him some more playing time. But now on to the pitchers, which I think is at least towards the tail end, a little bit more unpredictable. But going for the more predictable route first, who are your WAR or ERA leaders for the pitching staff?
Oh boy, that's a good question. So the tough part here is like, do you think does Hendricks keep it up? And honestly, I think he does. I think Hendricks is going to continue to, and I love it because he confounds all the notions that we have that, you know, you've got to have all, you got to be able to throw 95. And, I love watching him pitch. Of all the guys out there, I mean, Arrieta's got the nastiest stuff, and Lester just has the total package. But I love watching Hendricks because you talk about this guy who his face never changes. He just and there's nothing better than watching. I love a changeup, man. A good changeup. Who doesn't love that? When he just pulled the string on that and watch guys just look foolish up there. So I actually think this is because I just don't trust Arrieta's release point. I mean, Brendan, you've worked on this extensively and looked at a bunch of stuff, and I had looked at this previously in a much more obtuse manner. I think that I didn't really know what I was doing. You're much better with that than I am, but I just don't trust him to remain consistent. And I think Lester, what we're seeing, and this is the thing. You know, people shine the shiny object and they look at that and it's like, oh, Lester was a Cy Young candidate. His numbers in 2016 were not as good, other than ERA, were not as good as they were in 2015.
It's pretty funny. It's true.
And it's not really even close.
Yeah.
Right? His ERA was significantly better, and the BABIP that he allowed, the batting average on balls in play, a lot of that can be attributed to the defense, and he does tunnel very well. And I apologize for using like esoteric terms, but his pitches look very similar coming out of his hand to a batter, right? Mm-hmm. So as he's throwing them, they do look similar. And so he does things well. However, if you look across the board, he gave up more home runs. He struck out fewer batters. He walked more batters. you know, his fielding independent pitching, his FIP number was significantly higher than his ERA, which indicates that he was getting by on a lot of luck. And a lot of what happened was he would allow this contact that his superior defense cleaned up for him. And so I just think, you know, at 33 years old, we can't expect that to continue quite as well. He does have a superior defense. He does do really well. And I know people hear this, oh, they say Lester's going to get bad. No, he's just not going to continue to be as good. So Hendricks, Arrieta, Lester, the guy with the big teeth, and then whoever is in the fifth spot.
This is where I say Eddie Butler, right?
Yes, that's what. There we go. That makes sense.
Eddie Butler, yeah. Just and I'm done. No,
followed by Alec Mills.
Eddie Butler, Alec Mills, Jake Buchanan, and yeah, I'm gonna go with that. No, I think the pitching staff as a whole, when you look at the last two seasons, they've had a lot of things really go their way. You know, some of which Evan's already pointed out, but like they benefit pretty greatly from the defense behind them. And they've also been remarkably healthy for the last two seasons as a whole. We've been really lucky in that regard. But if I'm going to pick a war leader, I still think I'm going to take Lester there.
Yes. I think you kind of have to take Lester. And then if you were to follow up with Arrieta or Hendricks, who would you pick number two?
I think I'm going to go for Arrieta by a small margin, just because I think I'm hoping that some of what went wrong for him last season, as far as the release point, that he's going to get figured out a little bit better this season. And I won't fall into the trap of, you know, the people say it's his walk year, he's going to play for his next contract or anything, because I don't put a whole lot into that. I don't think that's really a real thing. But I just think the quality of his stuff can be so great if he gets that release point figured out that I'm gonna bank on an Arrieta bounce back this year.
So I am tempted to fall into that trap, Jared, and I don't believe in it either, but there's just something about when I look into Arrieta's eyes and think about yes, doubting him, there's just it's something scary that yeah, compels you to be like, maybe I believe in him, you know?
Yeah.
I tend to think that they finish the same way they did last year, Hendricks, Lester, Arrieta, but I really wouldn't be surprised if Arrieta sneaks up to the top. And you know, kind of piggybacking off of what Jared was saying, and I look kind of to those World Series starts where I think anybody that had been watching him the entire year or, you know, for even a little while, you could tell that he wasn't great in those games. But what does he throw? Like 9 no-hit innings between those two games or something like that? Yeah. You know, the guy has good enough stuff that he can get by whatever issues were plaguing him last year. I say issues, inconsistencies is, I think, a better word for it. And we'll see how that goes this year. I know we've seen some spring starts where, you know, a little more erratic, walking some more people. But I think that I don't want to fall into that trap, but I'm really tempted to, like, believe that he can just get dialed in. He's going to stick it to the Cubs for not giving them, you know, his 10-year, $800 million extension that Phil Rogers wanted them to give them. And I think it's possible that Arrieta gets back up to the top, but I'll take them in the same order that they finished last year. If I were a betting man,
I am going to not go with that line of thinking. Naturally, I am going to go with number one, Lester. So Corey, I'm not going to aggravate you too much. I think Lester, the reason being, like what Evan said, those tunnels, especially those new stats at Baseball Prospectus. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Lester is ranked tops in the league for some of those new tunnel stats. So hitters have a very difficult time deciphering between a cutter, fastball, curveball, whatever. So I think if that continues, which it should, because he's very repeatable with his mechanics, whether it's Baseball Reference WAR or Fangraphs WAR, I still think he'll lead the Cubs. But I don't think Hendricks will be too far behind. I think he'll continue his trend as well. And I think we're in for a treat with Hendricks, because kind of like what he did last year with mixing in more four seams as the year went along, I think we might see more of that this year with the curve. And he said that. Evan, you've written about it. I know a lot of different outlets have talked about it, especially some of your guys at Baseball Prospectus, Jared. And I know Isaac and some of the others have taken notice of that. But I'm not on board with Arrieta, guys. I'm not. The guy stresses me out so much every single start. I can't.
Oh, you don't say.
Corey has been on the receiving end of a lot of those text messages, but he scares me. He really does. And he really never regained that 2015 magic after the middle of May last year. And it scares me. His FIP was, I think, man, I don't have the number in front of me. Well, I want to say it's 3.68. Regardless, it was around 3.7. That I know. And yes, he has fantastic stuff. Not denying that. If for whatever reason, if something happens where he has more fatigue, I know the guy drinks kale like it's water, but if something happens where even a small little downtick in velocity occurs, I'm troubled by that. And his release point is a concern for me. Just because he never regained that stability at all. And we're talking 24, 23 starts of a dramatically, significantly different release point variance, way more consistent. That concerns me. I think he and Lackey will actually be neck and neck for WAR. And it pains me to say that, because I love Arrieta, and I would never say this to his face, or I would probably get punched instantly. So it scares me to say that, to be honest with you. But after those four, the fifth starter, I have no idea who would take hold of that position. I think ultimately, as the year goes along, they'll be mixing and matching. But if you were to pick right now, who accumulates the most starts out of that fifth spot, or who is the fifth pitcher to get the most starts, rather?
I still think Anderson's going to end up there. I mean, it sounds like, and I don't want to lay this on the, you know, I know a lot of people, I guess I give Joe Maddon a little bit more slack than a lot of folks do, but, you know, come on. We saw the writing on the wall. We knew this was coming when Brett Anderson tweeted, you know, wheels up to Chicago, and we started speculating on it, and it's, okay, this guy's been primarily a starter. And, oh, we're going to, you know, it's an open competition, and now it's a hybrid fifth starter. And, well, no, it's Anderson's the fifth starter and Montgomery's in the bullpen. I mean, they've kind of walked this along. And as long as he's healthy, I think Anderson's going to continue to start, unless he completely implodes. Mm-hmm. And then we see this. So I do think we're going to see him there. I think, Montgomery's going to get a bunch of starts there. Eddie Butler, again, we'll get enough to probably be way up close to the WAR leaders as Jared wants them to be. I'm sure. No, but I do. Butler looks pretty darn good. I mean, if we get it together, I'm telling you, this team's got like eight guys who could compete for that. But let's walk it back. Again, Anderson, Montgomery, and then like five guys kind of pull in a few starts here and there behind them.
Yeah, that's I was just thinking that I think Anderson and Montgomery will probably break about even with each other. I think between at one point or another, I imagine Anderson is going to have to hit the DL, even if it's something minor and he does like the 10-day DL, or when they stretch the rotation to six at some point, maybe in August or so, just to give some guys some rest. So I can see those two guys coming in about even. And then, like Evan said, we're going to see spot starts from probably a bunch of different guys, because we've seen some of that the last couple of seasons where, you know, they'll bring somebody up for a spot start or bring somebody to the bullpen for a few games just to kind of test them out and see what they can do. And I always look at that as like an eye toward the postseason, because you want to know who you have and who you have and what, you know, what they can do for you. And so I think we may see a pretty large number of spot starts from, you know, of course, the Eddie Butler, Alec Mills, Zastrzyzny is still hanging around. So there's a few guys I think will grab some starts kind of in that sixth spot or so. But, yeah, I think Anderson, Montgomery, it's going to be pretty even.
Yep. Just going to echo again.
Corey. My God.
No, I don't really have anything. I mean, I would love for Brett Anderson to stay mostly healthy. There's really nothing I love more. Maybe I like the Cubs more, but honestly, I kind of like, you know, when you get to stick it in Dodger fans' face that, you know, something worked out for us that didn't work out for them. So I would love for that to be the case, but that seems like a really terrible, like a really terrible thing to rely on. And yeah, I think that just, you know, with how much they were talking about getting Montgomery in there and the work that he did, I think that, you know, depending on how quickly, if Anderson has to go out, that happens. I think Montgomery can end up getting the fifth most. But yeah, I'd pretty much echo those sentiments.
Who is your biggest surprise candidate?
It's become less of a surprise in the last week, but Albert Almora. Mm-hmm. I really think Almora is going to, and again, this is only among Cubs fans, I guess. So I think on a national scale, he's definitely got the potential to open some eyes. Brendan, you had the piece on it the other day to show kind of his different stance. He's a little more upright. He's a little more balanced. That swing is so smooth. And the dude looks like he's put on 15 to 20 pounds of muscle. He's clearly lost nothing in the outfield. And I really do believe he's going to get out there in center field. Jay looks like he's healthy and playing well, but people are going to forget who the hell John Jay is once Almora gets out there and really starts showing what he's doing. So I think Almora is absolutely going to be a big surprise for everyone this year.
What about your biggest bust?
Biggest bust.
Yes.
Is going to be
on the spot. You don't have to have a bust candidate.
I hate to say it. Oh man, I don't. You know, and it's honestly it's a toss up. But I'm going to go out there in this hot take city. Arrieta. I want him to be good. I want him to be good. I so much do. But I worry about it, man. Yeah. He gets those innings where he just gets off like you just talked about, yeah. and he falls apart, and that scares me, and I don't want to admit it, so I'm going to move on. Next.
All right. I'm going to say, of course, I mean, you can't not say Almora at this point, because we're all kind of seeing it, but I think, like Evan said, outside of Cubs fans, people are going to take more notice of him. And I've been telling people this the last week or so that I think by midsummer, Almora is getting most of the starts in center field. He will probably start to feel like just your full-time center fielder. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I hinted at it earlier, but I think Addison Russell is just due for a big breakout year on offense. So I'm so sorry. I'm going to throw another one out there just on a much, much smaller scale, but nobody's really talking about him. But I think when people get a look at what Koji Uehara can do in a setup role, like seventh or eighth inning, I think we're going to be very pleased. I think he's going to surprise people. So just for fun, I'm going to say Koji.
Speaking of, has anyone gone deeper under the radar so far?
Right.
Than Uehara.
We forget that he's on the team already.
I know.
Right. Like, he's just, but I mean, when you're like 55 years old and you've been, you know, pitching forever, that right. happened. But I mean, seriously, it's almost like, oh, wait, yeah, he's on the roster.
You know what's crazy, too? Like, some of the projections have Koji being the best Cubs reliever, even ahead of Wade Davis, yeah. which is hilarious.
Well, I'm looking at it right now, and he's up there. You know, you look at a few of the projection systems, and he could be pretty darn close to Wade Davis. But yeah, it's like that. I think some people are convinced he's actually like a pitching coach or something. Yeah, because he has not been mentioned at all. I even forgot about him for a while, to be honest.
I forgot him 30 seconds ago.
Corey, biggest surprise, biggest bust?
Well, yeah, so I think, you know, when you do a podcast like this with four super intelligent gentlemen, you're going to get...
And handsome, I might add, yeah.
Evan, have you seen Brendan in person?
I have.
Are you saying I'm handsome?
I was saying the opposite, but it
sounded
land,
like you were saying...
All right.
Okay, continue, Corey.
Whatever.
I'm going to play your
You know, you tend to... You tend to get some similar stuff, so I hate to, you know, I am also on the Almora train. I agree with Jared very much that I don't think it'll be long until he's just sort of the everyday center fielder, and we don't really think much about that. I think given how much this team defers to defense and what we've seen out of his bat in the spring, I think it's, you know, I think it's almost easier to expect that than any other scenario, at least for me. I think Russell as well, again, to echo another name, I think that one depends on who you're talking to or what exactly your expectations are from him. I think from a casual fan standpoint, I think Russell is going to be a surprise for people. I still think that there's a lot of people, at least that I come in contact with, who maybe don't think of him as I think that they should. So I think he's definitely a candidate for that. I think I'll throw and he kind of was elevating to a status like this last year. But I think Carl Edwards has another good year. We'll see exactly what role that he plays. But I think that I think he could play a bigger role again than a lot of casual fans or people maybe not playing as close enough attention last year would expect. I don't necessarily have anybody for a bust. I think that this team is interesting because I don't know that anybody would necessarily be a bust, but a lot of these guys have so much hype, and I'm not really sure what level people are expecting them to play at. You know, obviously, you know, guys like Schwarber or Baez have kind of reached like mythical status at this point in the baseball world. So I don't think that they're going to be disappointing, but I also, it's hard to measure exactly what people are expecting out of them. You know, and I think especially during the World Baseball Classic, it's almost like, I think people forget that, you know, Javi Baez is not like a 300 hitter, you know, making great contact yeah. all the time, that can hit every type of pitching in every situation. And I think that there might be a lot of people who are surprised, you know, like that doesn't happen. He's still going to be a very valuable player. But I think from an expectation standpoint, I think some of these guys maybe don't live up to the cultural hype that has been created for them.
Yeah, and I didn't give a bust, but Javi Baez actually was the first guy that came to mind, but you can't see it, but I'm air quoting when I say bust, because you're exactly right. During the postseason, it was almost like his coming out party to the rest of baseball, because he hadn't garnered a lot of notice so far. So between that and the World Baseball Classic, I think you're exactly right. Expectations from other fan bases are going to be really high for Baez, but if they watch him play on a consistent basis, yeah, they're going to see, you know, these dazzling tags at second base, but they're also going to see where he's not a complete hitter and he can go really cold sometimes. And so again, air quotes, but a bust is probably Javi Baez. And if I can throw another name out there too, I think Hector Rondon might be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Broken.
Yeah, I don't feel good about him.
He might end up being like Andrew Miller in that he is just irreparably damaged.
Ever since David Ross.
David Ross broke it.
David
yes.
Ross broke Andrew Miller. Oh, David.
But I want to see Almora too.
Doing the Brizzo commercial.
I caught the reference.
Okay, thank you. Somebody got it. Watch the Brizzo commercial.
I usually don't get any inside jokes, so I'm not surprised I didn't get that.
I'm sorry. I should not. I apologize for being esoteric on your podcast.
You're forgiven. But I think Almora, like you guys said, I have to join in this time. I think Almora is kind of the biggest surprise candidate. And really, all the guy needs to do, like Hayward, is just hit for league average offense, and he's extremely valuable. But this power thing has really caught my attention. And I talked to John Arguello about it, and I asked him a question. Have you seen a power increase? Because I know John's always out in the backfields, and he's been there watching Almora when he was in the rookie league and AFL and every spring training. And when I was there a few weeks ago, I remember, because I used to go to some Arizona Fall League games as well the year that Almora played, and I don't remember him having this much pop even in batting practice. And there was one game where one session where Almora was hitting 8-9 homers and like 13 swings, just popping them like Schwarber and Rizzo and Bryant and those guys in that group. I couldn't believe it. So I'm interested. I don't know how many homers that would translate into actual games, but if he pushes 15 homers, that wouldn't surprise me, which is crazy to say. A year ago, if I said that, I would think I was more crazy than I already am. But in terms of bust, I already alluded to this quite a bit, but Arrieta scares the hell out of me, so I got to go with Arrieta. But that's basically it. I got Almora for my surprise and Arrieta for my bust.
So I'm going to jump back in here. I'm going to ad lib a question here, and if it's too close to the surprise answer, that's fine. But we only have, I think, you know, the following question we'll do, you know, is regarding win totals, division, you know, playoff, stuff like that. So before we wrap up, just curious, we saw, and going back to Jared, what you mentioned, especially with Baez, do you think there's anyone on this team? We saw Baez kind of transform into, you know, a worldwide celebrity, Mr. Worldwide, if you will, to steal another nickname. Do you think there's anybody on this team who has the potential to play that role next year? I have an idea myself, but someone who just becomes a baseball culture phenomenon for something like the hobby tags or anything like that?
I think people, even some Cubs fans, don't even know yet how good Wilson Contreras can be. That's my pick, Wilson Contreras.
So I'm gonna go. This is gonna be really surprising, given my predilections, but I think Warbear, Kyle Schwarber, is you know, he's got the New Era commercial coming out, right? He's got the ad for New Era caps. He's got some other stuff that he's got coming out. This is a guy who I don't know that people outside of, and I don't even think casual fans really understand how important he was emotionally and psychologically to this team with his presence there throughout. And this is what I love, right? And I won't go into too much detail and I'll try not to ramble, but the whole thing about the clubhouse, we saw this great revamped clubhouse they had, but the biggest part of that was they had excellent rehabilitation and physical therapy and a great gym that was there so that players who were injured did not have to go all the way back to Mesa and spend the entire summer in Arizona rehabbing. Schwarber was able to complete his entire rehab all spring, all summer, all fall in Chicago and remain around the team. This guy is their emotional core. We could talk about Rizzo, Chris Bryant. I love Chris Bryant, but even his dad will tell you, Chris is a quiet, kind of keep to himself, low key guy. People love him, but Chris Bryant is not the emotional leader. Kyle Schwarber is. And I think as they go forward, man, Schwarber, if that personality can kind of pop a little bit and he can do what I think he can, people are going to love this guy because you just he's like the everyman. Look at him. He looks like he's I wrote about it. I don't remember if it. Oh, I did. I wrote about it and it went out today. But he's a longshoreman, right? I mean, he's a fire hydrant. He's this guy. He's a dude. So anyway, I apologize because I rambled anyway, but I really think he could be that guy that really pops if he continues to do what I think he can do.
You and Schwarber, man, jeez. I agree with you, though. he's already a legend in my eyes. I mean, the guy breaks his entire lower half, essentially, colliding with Dexter Fowler in Arizona last year, comes back in 6 months in the World Series for the Cubs, and just rakes. He hits almost a homer off of Kluber in that first game, and then from there on out, boom, base hit, line drive, line drive, line drive. He gets the rally going in the top of the 10th in game 7. He's already a legend. And the crazy thing is, I can't remember one player with as little playing time in the bigs already making so much of an impact emotionally, even from a value point of view, in the playoffs. Even in the 2015 playoffs, Schwarber went off with those homers. But at the same time, like Jerry, like Wilson Contreras, you want to look for the very outgoing, jubilant personalities. And Contreras, who more than Contreras in terms of jumping around and going crazy than him? Maybe Baez is as crazy as Contreras is. But those two are, I think, are great candidates. I want to say Kyle Hendricks just to say it because his personality is so, like, you know, never changes his face and whatnot. Maybe people catch on and, I don't know, compare him to, they already do compare him to a professor, but kind of that Greg Maddux aura type of thing. So I can, I don't know, maybe that could happen as like some type of joke or whatnot. But yeah, Schwarber, I think it has to be Schwarber.
I was going to say Contreras too. I was actually watching the video of him doing the finger wag at D. Gordon from that game yes. last year. And I think, you know, a full season of him. I'm really looking forward to, I always look forward to John Lester starts, but I think we're going to get some really quality moments from those two. I think I'm really looking forward to those mound visits and pretty much any interaction between the two of them. I think will be a gif-able moment, perhaps. So that was going to be my answer, but just wanted to throw that one out there.
Wrapping this up, we have to ask this question. How many games will the Cubs win? And in addition, how many games ahead of the second-place finisher in the Central will they be?
I am not ashamed to go full on hot take meatball.
Let's do it.
And the Cubs are going to win. They are going to win more games than they won last year. They will win 105 games because they are better. The Reds are not any better. The Reds are Redsing. The Brewers are Brewersing. And the Cardinals have paid Yadier Molina a massive amount of money for 3 years to be a mediocre catcher. This is the level to which they have sunk. And the Cubs are going to win 105 games. They win the division by 12 games. And they will repeat. Because wow. The last time they won a World Series was the second half of repeat. And so this will be the first half of repeat, which they will do this year. It's all continuum.
Well, I see. I was feeling a little more conservative, but now Evan's got me all pumped up. So
let's go.
Yeah. Well, because like it's my, I don't know, my natural instinct is always like played down to whatever I expect initially. Because my first thought, my true first gut feeling is at least 100 wins again, because there's no reason to expect them to drastically underperform what they did last year. So let's go for it. I'm going to say at least 100 wins. I think they'll finish, the Pirates will come in second, but they'll be 14 games behind, so nobody's going to care. They're not even going to get a wild card spot. So we'll call it 100 games even, 14 games ahead.
All right, I'm going to Price is Right, Evan. I'm going to say 106 games.
Ooh.
Because I'm even more confident. Yeah, I mean, what do they win the division by last year? Like 14, 15 games?
1,000.
Like 1,000.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I think we're looking at the same thing. I think the Reds, you know, like Evan said, look as god-awful as they normally do. I think the Brewers have some interesting things going on, but they're not really in a place to compete. You couldn't pay me to make a prediction on the Pirates. I don't quite understand what to expect out of that group. But they're certainly not anywhere as good as the Cubs, or I think a threat to them. And yeah, I tend to agree on the Cardinals. I love Dex, but I don't think he is a needle mover in that regard, or at least enough to bridge the gap, especially with Alex Reyes going down and, you know, the staff that they have being one that has often played with injuries. So I don't really see it again. And I'm knocking on wood again because it's the second time I've said it. Unless something catastrophic goes wrong with the Cubs, I just don't see it. I knocked on wood, Brendan. Don't sigh.
Okay.
But yeah, I think they win more. Again, to go back to, you know, kind of the analogy I used, I think they really came into their own last year, and I think now they're, you know, just prepared to do it for the whole year. They know what they do. They know what their game is and who they are. And I am very much looking forward to seeing what guys like Javi Baez look like playing as a defending champion. I think that's very exciting. And I think that they're going to channel that energy and that swagger into some good production. And I'm not as bold as Evan to predict that they win the title again. I am not the kind of person that likes to predict what happens in the MLB playoffs. But I think the biggest threats, you know, to their status as the best team in the league would come from the American League, in my opinion. So I think, you know, you get there, you win the division. I definitely think they can. And I'm ready to go on the ride again.
Last year, Pythag and Base Runs had the Cubs winning 107 and 108 games based on scaled run production and actual run differential. So with that in mind, and the one question mark I have saying this, is Arrieta. But if Arrieta does even resemble last year, I think they're going to win 107 games. So I'm going to one-up your one-up of Evan Corey.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm going to go 107. In terms of how many games they win the division by, I am going to boldly project that by August, we will not even know how many games up the Cubs are because they will be so far ahead. I don't think the Cardinals really are going to be a threat. I mean, Pakoda has him winning 76 games this year. It's crazy.
That would be cool.
Yeah, and Lance Lynn's coming back from Tommy John. And I actually like Carlos Martinez's stuff, and I think he's a great pitcher, but he's dealt with shoulder injuries in the past, and shoulders scare the hell out of me. And Corey, like what you were saying with Reyes being down for the year, it's, you have to ask yourself the question, okay, can this rotation actually endure a 162 game baseball season? And I don't think it can. And while Dexter Fowler is a very good player, and it was a very good pickup by the Cardinals, let's not kid ourselves, for that type of money, but I don't think they have the surrounding core to compete with the Cubs. And the Brewers have a lot of interesting young players, but I don't think they're there yet. And the Reds, who knows what they're doing? They still have Joey Votto, and he's fun to watch, but I just don't see it. But one last question for you guys, a little bit more fun, but how many games will you be attending this year?
Oof. But before I get to that, I just want to say that I projected the Cubs at 105 wins, and I had the third highest
win total.
Yeah.
Well, we are a Cubs podcast, so we're inherently biased. But
right. I mean, we're inherently biased, but like generally, like somebody's going to be that guy who's you know, 95. Anyway, so I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I'm going to the ring ceremony game. I've been shamed into not attending the home opener by the rest of the Cubs insider.
Is that because I'm there?
That's why I'm not going. Yes, I don't know if that's why I'm being shamed into it, but I don't want to attend that with you. But it's either that or, you know, because we're closing on a new home that day. I don't know. Things happen. Life gets in the way. I'm going to move stuff, and then I'm going to show up on Wednesday. So I'll see them get the rings. But right now, only four games for sure. But, you know, hey, who knows what's going to happen? I'm going to get to as many games as I can because I really do feel like last year was a lot of fun because you kind of felt like you knew from the start something was going on. I was at both games in Anaheim to open the season, and you knew from the jump that it was different. And it's going to be a lot of fun this year. I can't wait to be up there and just kind of soak it in a little bit. I'm going to try to borrow a lot of Corey's tickets and go out, ideally for games that he's not attending so I can – so I don't have to be there with Corey.
Ooh, hot fire!
Evan, we're undefeated together. How could you say that?
That is true. Corey and I were there at the Matt Caesar game. We produced the Matt Caesar game against the Cardinals. After which he just completely crapped the bed. But it's actually a great deal of fun to go with people who, again, who kind of have that same vibe, and you can kind of sit there and just talk stats and this and that. So I'm going to get as many games as possible. I don't know, four for sure. Ideally, like 35. Who knows?
Yeah, I've never been one to. I don't plan out too much in advance which games I'm going to go to. I'm always kind of take them as they come. I've got a few people I know who have season tickets or are connected to somebody with season tickets, and so there's usually, you know, a few opportunities will pop up, and I generally will end up at least four or five games. And so, yeah, I honestly don't even know which one the first one I'll go to will be. I haven't even planned that out yet. But yeah, usually that's what it comes out to, about four or five.
So the only games I have planned right now, I'm going to go back for that first homestand. And then I actually have some friends from college out in the Boston area, so I'm going to make that trip. God. I've never been to Fenway, so felt like the time to pull the trigger on that. And beyond that, I don't know. As Jared was mentioning, I am someone with season tickets, so if anybody ever needs them, you're more than welcome to hit me up.
What about me?
Technically... let's see your performance out the gate. I know you're going to that, you know, the opening game, and we'll see if the Cubs get through Brendan in person unscathed. But you know, the last couple of years I've headed back to Chicago in around June or so, and then I kind of ride out the whole deal. Fortunate enough to have a job I do remotely, so it's pretty easy for me to do that. Pretty much all of my money goes to pay for those season tickets, but for the last couple of years, it's been the best decision I ever made. So So moral of the story: we'll start with the first homestand and a trip to Boston, and we'll go from there. Brendan, I know they come out here, I think, to San Diego and LA, I think, at the end of May. So that was something I was thinking about, even though I really detest going to Dodger Stadium. But that's a discussion for another podcast. But yeah, very much looking forward to it. I know I think I said on here before, but I sort of stopped and thought about the notion of being inside Wrigley Field while they're being referred to as the defending champions, and there's a new flag up and all that stuff. And it was... you know, goosebump type of stuff, at least for me, because I just, you know, you think back to how many times you've been in there under a totally different context and paradigm. And I think it's just fascinating to think about being there in a totally different world. So very much looking forward to it, and ready to do my part to defend whatever that is.
So I will be there opening night with Corey. Ooh. And yeah, I know, with Corey and John Ferlise of Cubs Insider as well. Just heads up, guys, the first Cubs game I went to last year was in Arizona, and so the first Cubs game I saw Kyle Schwarber killed himself. So hopefully that doesn't happen again. But I will say this, the last Cubs game I went to, they beat the Dodgers in game 5 of the NLCS. So I did end the year on a good note. But it realistically, like Corey was saying, I'll be going to all the Dodger games. So any listeners who are out in the West Coast, they want to see Corey and I and chat, we'll be there. Maybe San Diego, Arizona, probably around 10, 15 games in total. But that wraps up our season preview. It's, gosh, God, it's surreal that this offseason's over. It's like, I don't, in a way, I want the season to start, but at the same time, I kind of just want to hit the snooze button a little bit more and kind of enjoy this world championship offseason. But nevertheless, we have to go and defend the title. But I'd be remiss if I didn't give Jared time to plug in his work. His work's fantastic. I know a lot of the guys with him do great work, and I really enjoy talking with them. We've had Isaac Bennett on the podcast in the past, and I know he in particular does amazing work. So, Jared, tell our listeners where they can find your stuff at.
Well, I'll start with BP Wrigleyville, of course. And speaking of Isaac Bennett, he wrote something that went up today, which was just phenomenal.
It was great.
He looked at the big red machine of the 70s versus the Cubs of today, drew some comparisons, and I think what he found was actually kind of surprising. So I'll leave it at that and just titillate people a little bit so they can go read it themselves if they haven't yet. But BP Wrigleyville, Cubs Den, and Cubs Den, I'm excited because I do mostly just game recaps and stuff there. During the off season, I've just been doing, you know, once a week or so, I'll just kind of throw something out there. But the game recaps there are a lot of fun. And I think what's nice about that is you can go to a place like Cubs Insider and read the game recap, and then you can go to Cubs Den and read the game recap, and it's going to have a different feel to it. So I think for Cubs fans, we're kind of spoiled because we have multiple places we can go for that kind of stuff. The last place I'll plug is 2080 Baseball. I do just minor league prospect stuff there. Phenomenal site if you're looking to stay up on your prospects across the league. There's video, scouting reports. It's an awesome, awesome site. So 2080 Baseball, check it out.
On that note, let's get this season started, and we will talk to you guys very soon.